Start off saying, this is the story of my grandma.
Yeah. My name is Nikki. I am 31 years old. Today is December the 31st of 2017, and I'm speaking with my grandmother, Faye, who is 76 years old. We're recording this interview in Haleyville, Alabama. Okay, Grandma, you always have great stories. My first question is, what was your childhood home like? And who else lived with in the house with you? What did your bedroom look like? All that stuff that you can remember.
Okay, we didn't have a bedroom of our own. Mama had, like in what we would call a living room, they had two beds at that time, and then they had other bedrooms, and there were a couple of beds in them. There was eight of us children, and Mom and Daddy, so there's 10 people lived in the house. And we had a wooden floor. We didn't have any linoleum on it when I first remember. And it would get real dirty, and Daddy'd have to bring sand in, sprinkle on the floors to make it white. It'd be just as white and pretty for a while. But then later we got linoleums to go on it, and we thought we were uptown then because we could mop that floor, and it was just pretty and clean. And
so how did you clean the floor when it was the sand floor? Did you just, dump it out after a while, or did
Yeah, we'd have to sweep it out after a while, mm-hmm. after it kind of... I think Mom would leave it there about a week, and it would kind of absorb all the stains and stuff in the mm-hmm. floor. But we had no electricity until I was about 11 years old, and so we had to get water from the well, which was convenient. It was about in halfway middle of our porch where we didn't have to get out in the weather mm-hmm. and get to draw water. But anyway, we'd draw water. That was one of my jobs, to draw a bucket of water up at night. Daddy always wanted a bucket full of water mm-hmm. in case a house got on fire or something, so we wanted to have some water in the house. So I had to draw a bucket, make sure the water bucket's filled at night after we all had supper and everything. And we had, Mama cooked on wood stove. We had like a little dining room, and then the kitchen, and two bedrooms besides. But anyway, there was two full-size beds in the living, what we call the living room. Mama didn't have a couch at that time. And they had a straight back chairs, cane bottom chairs, that they'd kind of line around, like a semicircle around a fireplace where people would sit on. And if there was an overflow of people, then they would sit on the beds and talk. But Mom and Daddy always slept in the room where the fire was and so Daddy could get up and put wood on at night so it wouldn't get terribly cold. And then when I got a little bigger, I went to and my sisters had all moved off, and I got to one of the bedrooms to myself at that time, and it was just it was in the other end of the house, and it was cold because I never kept a fire in there. And I can remember going to bed, and it was so cold till I'd have 9 quilts on the bed. I couldn't hardly turn over, it'd be so heavy. And sometimes Mama would wrap a brick or something, heat it by the fireplace, and wrap it in a towel and put it to my feet when I went to bed when I was little. And anyway, we always had the best food. Our mama was a great cook, and we always had plenty of food to eat. People talk about the Depression era and everything, about how they'd be so hungry and all, but we lived on a farm, so we were considered lucky that we could have anything we wanted to eat. We had always had hogs to kill since it turned cold weather. Dad would kill sometimes 2 or 3 and salt them down. It had a huge box, kind of like a coffin, about mm-hmm. the size of a coffin, had it full of salt. And or about 3/4 full of salt. And then after he killed the hog, he'd cut the meat up, and Mom would make sausages, and out of some of it, she would put it through a grinder, and it would come out, you know, like the hamburger meat. It'd be in that consistency. So that was sausage, and oh, it tastes so good. And then we had the shoulder. We used it to cook kind of like salt pork and stuff. And the ham, Daddy always salted the hams down. Well, I guess he salted his shoulders down too, but the sausage, you had to do something with them. And we'd usually eat them pretty quickly. And if Mama had an excess of them, she would can them in jars, put them mm-hmm. in a jar and pressure them so they'd keep. And they were pretty good like that. And the tenderloin was what we really loved the best, though. And we'd use them as soon as they got the hog cut up and everything. Mama started frying tenderloin. And it was so delicious because most of the time in the summer you didn't have much meat left because the salt would be kind of losing its savor, I guess you call it. And Mama had meat to run, even though it was in salt, sometimes not much, but she'd try to cook it up before it run. But anyway, had vegetables all summer to live on, which you didn't have in the winter, fresh vegetables. But in the winter, we had mom canned beans and stuff like that when I was little. And when she said that, like when they first started canning, the home extension office came around to teach women how to use a pressure cooker, and because they didn't know how. And so she came around to different farms and taught the women how to pressure the food to preserve it. And that was probably a big help. And Mama always had plenty of canned food. Everything that she grew that she could, she would can, because she was a real hard worker. So we always had plenty of food to eat. We had the chickens that we could fry, catch and fry, and then Mama, the old hens, if they were getting too old and didn't lay, she'd cut them, catch them and make stew out of them. And it was, they were so good because she didn't worry about the fat in it. She, the more fat, the better it was, you know, the more flavor it was in her mind, I guess. Anyway, we had young pullets, we'd call them pullets, that were just about eating size. That was before they got completely grown, and they ran in the yard and everything. She'd hatch her some eggs in the springtime when the hens were laying, and she'd let one of them, instead of using gathering all the eggs, she'd let one set on her egg so she could raise some little baby chickens. And she would mark, she'd take a pencil and mark on one side of the egg, and then when they turned them, I don't know if it was every day or what, but they turned them regularly so the hen would warm both sides of the egg, I guess. And anyway, that was why they could tell if
could keep up with it if they'd done it.
Yeah, if it needed turning or not, she could tell by the mark on the eggs. And then when the chickens was hatched, they was always so sweet. And she'd try to protect them from other things till they got big enough to kind of go on their own. And then that she'd call them fryers when they got big enough to eat. Fry. She, if the pullets, that was the hens, she'd keep them. And she tried to kill all the roosters out because she just needed one rooster. And she'd kill the roosters, and we'd fry them, and she saved the hens to have more eggs and stuff. And so we always had eggs, milk from milking the cow. We had bacon and all the kinds of meats from the hogs, and even sometimes Daddy would kill a steer, a little young bull. And Mama, I don't know why they didn't salt it down, but she always cooked it up, cut it up, and canned it. And she cut it in strips and stuff, and then she'd take it out in the wintertime, and she'd roll it in flour. She'd have enough juice in there, and she could roll it in flour and fry it, and it was really good like that. And so we never had any trouble with her not having enough to eat. We didn't have a lot of clothes. We'd have one or two, maybe three outfits, but we just didn't have that many clothes. And we'd get one pair of shoes in the fall when Daddy'd take the cotton cropping, and we always got new shoes. And we get a new pair at Decoration Day. We didn't get anything for Easter, but Decoration Day was our big spring day. And Daddy and Mama always made sure we had a new outfit and clothes and shoes, too, to wear, because the first Sunday in May was the decoration where Mama, her people all lived down at Union Hill, Parkertown. And
for anybody who doesn't know what Decoration Day is, can you kind of explain that briefly?
Decoration Day. I guess I thought everybody always knew what Decoration Day was, and I found some people from Mississippi, and they were saying, what are y'all getting your hair fixed?
That's decoration one of the things when I started working downtown, one of the girls I worked with, she said, what's decoration? And I was like, well.
And anyway, we always got new clothes for then, and they'd put it on credit. We had Mr. Jess McCarthy, I think it's where Mama always took us to get her clothes, and he'd put it on a bill till fall when Daddy got paid, and Daddy'd go and pay him then. So we, even if we didn't have money, we had new clothes for decoration because we always felt like we were uptown when we got our new decoration clothes.
And it was kind of a social event, too, right?
Yeah, it was. And well, you'd see people you hadn't seen all year since the decoration of the other year because everybody would come to decorate their loved ones' graves. And I mean, it was kind of a shame if you didn't go, and you were kind of not really outcast, but kind of looked down on if you didn't take care of your elders' graves and everything, because in like the first week in August, well, I mean, right before Decoration Day, like on a Thursday or Friday, usually right before Decoration Day, people would go and clean the graveyards off, and they'd clean them from, even though they didn't know the people a lot of times, and they'd just, my Uncle Walter, that was Mama's sister's husband, he'd always say, by jingles, let's go and clean the rest of these graves off when they met, even though they weren't their people, you know, because, but then some of the people come and say, well, our people, sometimes I already clean our people's graves off, and they'd leave instead of cleaning others off. And anyway, it's kind of a shame if you didn't take care of your people's graves. Mm-hmm. And so on decoration, that was like a couple of days before decoration, and they'd house sand in. Back then, everything scraped clean was a sign of beauty because they didn't have lawnmowers and stuff to mow lawns. So we'd get out and clean our yards by scraping every bit of grass out of the yard. And then when it rained, we'd just track off that mud in the house.
Oh, no.
But we didn't have any way to mow the lawn when we grew up. So
that's something I haven't thought about.
Yeah, so we thought, you know, we'd get our yard fixed, scraped off, and it was so pretty and clean. Because being a farmer, we liked everything. No grass. And so anyway, we'd go to decoration, and we'd get to meet friends on Sunday that we hadn't seen probably in a year, especially mm-hmm. Mom and Daddy would love to go, because a lot of their older friends, they didn't have telephones, and they didn't go to town all that much, mm-hmm. and so they just didn't see each other from year to year sometimes, and they just caught, it was their catching up time, and Mom would always complain that I wish they wouldn't have preaching on Decoration Day, because that's the only time I get to see people talk to them. So anyway, you had dinner on the ground, you got Mom always fried chicken, and that was a big thing, was fried chicken, and she'd take biscuits and cake, one or two cakes, and they'd spread on the ground. When I first remember, they'd take sheets, the ladies would, and put the food on the sheets on the ground. But later on, they got tables built, and when I was getting on in my teens, I guess, got tables built so you didn't have to sit down on the ground to eat. But people would come from all over, and a lot of people that were so poor they didn't have anything, I guess, that was kind of a free picnic for them, because you could just go down the line and get what you wanted on your plate, and not have to, you know, cook anything if you weren't from that area, you didn't have cooking. But most people cook, but I remember Mama saying, well, they just come to eat. Some people are kind of considered trashy, I guess, and they'd come to the decoration. I don't know if they had people there or not, but they'd come to just to eat all that good food, which I can understand that. It's kind of like a buffet, free buffet.
Yeah. All right, Grandma, do you remember your first kiss?
No.
You don't?
No.
Do you know if it was with Papa?
No,
or
it wasn't
with
him. That was a long time before I met him. I was a woman about 10 before I met him.
I'm sure you were.
Yeah.
You seem like the top.
Yeah. No, I was 14, I think, nearly 15 when I first started dating, but I could only double date at that time. And
she kissed and told, apparently.
Yeah. So
did you go with your sisters, or
no, they were already married. Mm-hmm. I went with my cousins, Dorothy Nail sometimes, and Winnie Sue Blankenship married Edward Llewellyn, and I went with her. I was dating, actually, Edward's brother, I think, was probably the first time I got kissed, because that's the first date, and I don't know if he kissed me or not, I don't remember, but it wasn't memorable.
You didn't slap him.
I didn't slap him. And then it was about 5 years later, six years later when I met Raymond, so
yeah,
I was kissed out by then.
What kind of dates did you guys go on when you went on a date?
To the movies, usually, or skating. Me and Raymond went skating. We went dancing, too.
Yeah.
But most of the time around Moulton, but that was in Chicago.
Right.
Around Moulton, about all you had to do was go to the movies or skating rink. You had to go a little ways to a skating rink. And sometimes you go uptown and you're just riding around the square. It's a square with a courthouse in the middle at Moulton. And you'd just go around and around it. And then you'd go down, you'd make a loop every once in a while, go down to the Dairy Queen. And boys would say, are you hungry? And I'd be starving. Sometimes I'd say, no, I'm not hungry.
Kids still drive around like that.
Yeah. You're trying to meet boys and the boys is trying to meet girls.
Yeah.
And so, but I can remember being so hungry and I'd think, I just wish I had a hamburger, because you go past that hamburger joint and it smells so good, which we didn't. Mama cooked hamburgers at home, but it wasn't hardly the same as eating out of town.
Were you just embarrassed to eat in front of them, or did you?
Well, no, I was conscious of, I knew how, Willard and Hillard Ben Bowers, just older than me, and when they'd get the truck, when they, Daddy let them have the truck to go on a date, which usually one or the other had it every weekend, but anyway, maybe Dad didn't have enough money to give them, but just enough to get the girl in the movie or something, if we went to the movie. And so they might not have enough to take her out to eat. And I was just always conscious of not wanting to put a boy on the spot. But if he asked me, I guess he had enough money, but I was just afraid that I would be too expensive for him if I wanted a hamburger. He wouldn't want to date me again if I wanted a hamburger.
And, I always worry about that still. Like, whenever I go on a date, I think, don't get, like, anything expensive. Just get something reasonable.
But anyway, that was, our dating was mostly done riding around the squares. And you met people at church, which was a social center, you know, at that time. Everything was centered around the church, kind of. And that's how Mama met Daddy, was at church. He, boys would go around where there's a revival, and Dad and some, his uncle or something, went to a church where Mama was going to church, and so he asked her if he could walk her, walk her home, and he tied, he tied his mule to the back of Grandpa Jarrett's buggy or whatever, that Mama, or wagon, I guess they, I don't think they had a buggy, I think they were too poor to have a buggy, they just had a wagon, they went to church and everywhere, and he tied his mule to the back of the wagon and found out where she lived, where he could go visit her on Sunday then.
That's a good plan.
Yeah, but that's how he, they met.
So can you tell us how you, first of all, you grew up in Moulton, and Papaw grew up in Haleville, right. And they're about 30 minutes to an hour apart, just depending on the roads. Can you tell us how you met? And where you met?
Well, we met in Chicago. This was after I had finished high school and gone up there, and I was living with Ben Edison, working at Western Electric. And Raymond was working at Wessonall. And he lived with his sister, Janelle, and, at that time. There was just no industry at all in the South. And even though I had a high school education, I couldn't find a job real soon. So even the shirt factory didn't want to hire me to sew. And so I went up there because there's always plenty of jobs in big cities like that. For Southern people especially, because they knew they were hard workers. Managers knew that if they hired Southerners, they would work. And I was living up there in... Raymond's sister, Janelle, was dating this boy. B had introduced me to Jimmy and Letha Johnson, who lived upstairs from B and Edison, and with their mother and daddy. And Letha was about my age, and B had introduced me to them, and so me and Letha would hang out a little bit after I worked and everything. And so she had fixed up a double date with me and her, and she'd asked me if I'd go, and she was dating a boy named Tex. And she put me with this boy called Jay Bird. She asked me if I'd go with Jay Bird. Jay Bird, yeah. Tex had a convertible car, and we laid froze to bed. Anyway, but Jay Bird was just a dork. I mean, he's just awful, terrible. So we went, we had to go pick Letha's brother up. He was dating Raymond's sister. Letha Johnson's brother was dating Raymond's sister. And we had to go pick him up because he had a new car, but he didn't drive up north because he was afraid to drive. And it was a real sharp, long, pretty car. And his daddy drove it all the time. Old man driving that pretty sharp car. But he was afraid to drive it, afraid he'd wreck or something. I don't know. He was too scared to drive it. Or anything. He's just kind of a jerk, too. And anyway, we went over there to pick... Letha's brother up, and his name was Jimmy. We went over there to pick him up from, he'd gone on a date with Janelle. I guess he took the train or L train or something over to see her, but anyway, we went to pick him up and got there, and we went up four flights of stairs, no elevator. We had to walk up there. Of course, it was all right then, I was young, but anyway, I got upstairs, they weren't home, and we started back downstairs, and here they came up the stairs. They'd been to the laundromat. Mm-hmm. First time I saw him, he had a bag of laundry in his arms, and so they came on in, and we went back in and visited with him a little while before we left, and Raymond said he noticed my pretty legs first thing. He thought I had the prettiest legs. I don't know why he's looking at my legs, but anyway, that was what attracted him, me first. That's why
what
he
did
said.
You think when you first saw him?
Well, I thought he was really handsome. He had curly hair, and it was just he was just a dreamboat, I thought. Anyway, he said he'd pay for some drinks if somebody'd go get us some Cokes. And this Jay Bird, the dumb idiot, I swear, says, I'll go.
He lost his chance. So,
yeah, he didn't have a chance to start with. But he volunteered to go, and so Raymond gave him some money, and he went and got us all some Pepsi to drink. And then while he was gone, Raymond started hitting on me, and... Raymond planned it on purpose to get him out of the picture so he could hit on me. He started talking to me, and it worked. Anyway, after we left, and then the next week, Janelle called me and asked me, would I go out with him? And I said, well, I don't know. Let him call me, and I'll talk to him. I think he got Janelle to call Sue, but he said he didn't, but I think he really did. I think he was just too shy to call me.
May have been.
And then he called after she hung up. He called, and might have been the next night. He didn't appear too eager or something. But anyway, he called right away and asked me if I'd go out with him on a date the weekend, and I told him, yeah. So from there, the rest is just history. Well, that was in along in March, I think. February, March that we met, or January. It was still cold in Chicago anyway, and we married in October, so.
Yeah, so that was
a fast romance.
How did he ask you to marry him?
Well, he kept saying, well, see, back then the boys were drafted in the Army when mm-hmm. they turned 18, I think. They stood a chance of being drafted, but they had a lot in the Army at that time, and so they weren't drafted until they were about 22, I think. Which Ryman was 22 when we married, and so he knew that his number was going to come up to be drafted for too long, and he started talking about, well, when he got his time served in the Army, he wanted us to talk about marriage, you know. And then the next time he came, next time or two died away, he's getting a little closer, moving a little closer, and he said, well, what about if we just get married before going to the Army? And I said, well, I don't know. And he said, would you marry me or something? It wasn't anything fancy. He didn't get down on his hands and knees, but he asked me in that way if I would consider marrying him. And I said, let me think about it. And so next week he said, well, what do you think? And I said, I pretended I was real coy. I said, what are you talking about?
he's probably going crazy in his head.
I got to know.
Just tell me.
And I said, what are you talking about? And he said, you know. And I said, what? I played it for all it was worth. And he said, what I asked you last week about marrying. And I said, well, yes. And he grabbed me and kissed me then real good. Big old long smooch. And so then we started setting a time, and from being 2 years in the future, it got to 2 weeks.
Might as well just do it then if you're going to do it.
I reckon. Anyway, he wanted, he said, well, when to marry? And I said, well, I guess the first weekend in October would be a good time. It's about 3 weeks. And I think you're still on. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't tell this a bit, but we went, I had my dress already picked out and had on layaway, which felt like I could just pick it up when we went to get married. And I had me it was kind of a ivory color. And Raymond I bought a blue hat and gloves. Women wore gloves a lot then. And I had my shoes and new, I bought me a peignoir, a real thin, see-through long gown with a kind of like a wrap to go over it, you know. I mean, a house coat like. And it went thin. And I bought it, had it on layaway for my wedding night.
Is it like a nightgown then?
Yeah. And so we picked it up the week before, I think. Raymond carried it to his apartment. And we got her blood test the week before. And when I was, Raymond, I went to get mine first. He said, we better take her because she might faint. And I got there, and it didn't bother me. And then Raymond got there, and he liked to faint it. He said, told the doctor, said, oh, I think you better get me some water. He said, yeah, I was just thinking that. And Raymond, I was so skinny at that time, Raymond asked him, said, well, is there anything you could give her to make her gain a little weight? Which was a mistake. And the doctor said, don't worry about it. Said, the time she's had two or three kids, she'll be so fat she can't sit in that chair there.
He had a way with words.
Oh, he had a way with words. And anyway, Raymond is like, I didn't think that was possible because I was so skinny then. But it is possible, let me tell you. Probable instead of possible. But anyway, that was the week before that our wedding date. And so then that morning he picked me up then. I met him outside of Dee's apartment. I told her I was going to go downtown shopping at the Loop with my girlfriend Lee that I worked with, Icy Lee. She was from Alabama too, and I met her at work, and we were kind of good friends. So I told her I was going shopping down the Loop with her, and I left Dee's house, and Raymond met me about two blocks away. And I got there, and I thought, he's not here. I guess I've been jilted. So I just kept walking, and I kept hearing somebody blow the horn. And finally looked around, and Raymond's standing by the car motioning me to come on. You know, I'd gone already past maybe half a block because I thought he wasn't there. I don't know if he was late or if he just realized it was me or something. But anyway, we went in the car, and we went to the apartment, and I changed into my wedding clothes. And we picked up a bouquet and a boutonniere that we had, Ryman had ordered, picked it up, went on downtown Chicago to City Hall, and we went in, we had to take our blood test papers, I think, and, but anyway, we went married, the judge married us at City Hall, and, but when it started in, there was the Democratic parade, they were having a Democratic parade, which at that time, the mayor of Chicago, Richard Daley, he was a huge Republican, and he'd been in office for years and years and years, and so they were having a Democratic parade downtown, right where we had, you know, City Hall was, and they had cars lined, limousines there, had like two or three limousines, and they had a donkey in the front of the limousines, and they were fixing to have a Democratic parade, and I know that JFK and Jackie was in that one of those limousines.
Oh, wow.
Hadn't have been so
they came to their wedding.
Starstruck. Yeah, I tell everybody they came to my wedding. I'm just sure they were. But they were in Chicago at that time. And because Susan looked it up on the paper, on the internet, Chicago Sun-Times, and it told that they were in
there.
That's cool. So I know that that was them in one of those limousines. But that time I wasn't too interested in politics, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, the policeman was standing there, and he had the traffic block coming from one way, and he told us to go and cross, and he said, well, good luck, and so we went on in there, and we got married, and we came out, and it was all gone, and everything, the parade had already been while I was getting married, but they had, JFK had a parade for me for my wedding day.
It was just for you?
Just for me.
Hang on.
When we were just a few probably 10 minutes away from B's apartment after we got married, we were going to go there and tell her we got married, and so Raymond, I don't know, one of us had the idea to stop and call her, and Raymond, when he went to the payphone there and called her and said, is Faye there? And she said, no, she's gone downtown with her friend Leah shopping. And then about 5 or 10 minutes later, me and Ryman walked in. We were already on the way over there. So we walked in, and B saw us in my wedding dress, or it was just a street dress, like, but it's three quarter, you know, come below my knees. And
mm-hmm.
It was a neat little dress, and had a little jacket on it, and a little blue feathered hat, and blue gloves, and everything to match. And so I thought I was all fixed up real pretty, and I guess I looked pretty good. But anyway, she said, oh my goodness, Patsy, or Joyce ran to the door, Joyce, I think, ran and opened it. And she said, Mother! And B came, and she said, oh, I'll be she realized what happened. She said, why didn't you let me go with you? And I've always felt bad that I didn't invite B to share my moment of joy, you know,
because yeah.
She felt let down that I didn't ask her, I think, and I, rightly so, I don't blame her. But she said, she first thought, what in the world? And Patsy hid behind the door. She was always afraid of Raymond, so she would hide behind the door. And I don't remember about Max and Dale, but anyway, B sent one of the kids over across the street. There was a drugstore across the street, and she sent one of them over there to get some films, so she made the pictures. Otherwise, we wouldn't even have any films of our wedding date.
Yeah. Okay, Grandma, this is kind of a little short question. Can you tell me the dumbest thing you ever did, or the dumbest thing you ever think you ever did?
It's too many to tell. Well, when I first started working in Chicago, I worked in the office at Weber Lithographic, and this woman had told me that on some certain day, like Tuesday or something, the janitor would be there early, because I walked over to work from B's. It was a long ways, but I walked. But anyway, before I finally started riding the bus, but anyway, I went in there, and I forgot about the janitor being in the bathroom. I saw his bucket there, but it just didn't dawn on me. I was slow-witted or something. It didn't dawn on me. He was in there cleaning the toilet. And I was just thinking it was one of the other women. I heard him in there, but I was thinking it was one of the other women had gotten there early. And so I went in and used the bathroom. By the time I started peeing, I remembered she told me it was a janitor. And that was one of the dumbest things I ever did.
He must have just thought you weren't shy.
I did. I don't know what he thought about me, but I was so embarrassed when I realized that it was the janitor.
Did you hide in the stall until he left? Because that's what
no,
I would
have done. No, I got out there real quick before he did.
I'd have been hiding in there forever.
I think my pee time was short that time.
Well, are there any stories that you haven't told us that you think that you would like to?
Not really, because I usually tell y'all everything when I think about it as the time comes, because I'm like Daddy about that. I enjoy telling the stories.
We enjoy hearing it. We talked about your most embarrassing moments. Can you tell me about your most adventurous moment? Like, I know you don't see yourself as adventurous, but we've always saw you as kind of adventurous, going to the city and working and leaving the small town. And
yeah, I guess that was the most, and I probably wouldn't have been that adventurous, but B was living there, and my brother Willard was living there, and his wife, too. And so I left when some of them come home that summer after I graduated. I went back with them to hunt a job, and it was kind of frightening, everything, getting on the bus first time and talking on the phone and just stuff like that, and finding my way around in a big city. But they were all real helpful. Otherwise, I'd never had the courage to go on my own. But I guess that was the most frightening thing, but I learned.
Well, what was that first job like?
Well, it was real frightening. All of them spoke Chicago, Chicagoanese, you know, and they liked to hear me talk. And this one man, every time he'd come, he'd have a pack of gum. I was a receptionist, and he would give me the gum and his card. He'd hand me his pack of gum and his card, and he'd say, "Can I see?" I don't remember their names, but the bosses, you know. And I had to say he was in or he wasn't in, or had to get on the phone sometimes. They'd say, "I'm not in." The man standing right there, you know. And it was intimidating to me so much. But then the girls, I picked up a northern brogue before I really realized it. And one of the days, one of the women said, "Well," one of the men that was a salesman said, "I can't hardly tell Faye from," there was another girl from Pennsylvania named Gay. He said, I'm getting where I can't tell Faye from Gay. She's getting such a northern accent." And that's the first time I'd realized, you know, you just pick it up like people are saying without even being conscious of it. And so when I come home, I put on my northern brogue, I guess, a little bit. But I tried not to. I didn't want to, because people kind of laughed at people went up there and just stay a week or two and then come home with a northern brogue.
Well, what did your job entail? Like, what did you do?
Typing and answering the phone. And I cut one of the big bosses off one time. He came out of the office and bawled me out. Right in front of everybody. And that's humiliating me, really.
Oh, yeah. That
I didn't mean that. He was getting a call, but I didn't realize he was on the line. And so I cut him off and put him on that other line. So I wasn't too good at it.
Well, that's okay.
But they liked my southern accent. They'd call me Dixievale.
Well, I've asked you a lot of questions. Are there any questions that you never asked me that you'd want to ask me?
Well, I don't know, but anyway.
What's the meanest thing you've ever done?
Meanest thing I've ever done? I did so much mean when I was little. I mean, I was mean. I cut a hole in Renner's new dress. She was so proud of it, and it's little checks. And I got my scissors and I cut a square, and then I don't know, out of it, and I don't know why. And then one time Daddy bought Rena this pretty swan that was pink swan. It was made out of shells for the wings and little pipe stem for its neck and real small shells for its face. And so it made me mad because he didn't bring me something. So I got scissors and I cut that booger all to pieces.
Oh no. Poor Rainer. She got the brunt of you, didn't she?
Rainer, guys, she was so good, and man, they just took things out on her. Anyway, I got whipped for it, and then B came in, she petted me for it. She always petted me no matter how mean I was. So that was probably about the meanest thing, because that was such a pretty swan, and I was so jealous because I didn't get anything.
And I'd like to bring up about now that you have collected swans your entire life.
I never realized the connection. Good point. I never realized the connection. I collected swans for several years, but I got too many and I had to quit.
Well, can you tell me some of the most important lessons you've learned that you think you've learned?
Not pitch fits, not to bite my own finger. If I'm mad at somebody, I
bite them
instead of myself, or pull their hair instead of my own hair. Most important lessons I've learned what?
In your life, yeah.
I think I learned to treat other people with kindness. I like to think that's my strong point. I don't know. But I always think that it could be, you know, walk a mile in my shoes and then before you criticize me. So I always try to think that they might be having a bad day. I mean, it's not that I'm an angel, because I get mad at people and I say things I shouldn't say. And
does that.
I don't bite my fingers anymore and don't pull my own hair.
No fit throwing like you did when you were a kid then.
What I want to know is, would JT think that you were the kindest?
Oh, yeah, JT was my boyfriend. I mean, no, he wasn't my boyfriend. He liked me in the first grade. And he gave me a little notepad for Christmas, and he was so proud of it to have something to give me because we didn't have money for nothing. I don't know where he got it. It looked like it had been partly used, but that was all right.
Maybe
but
he stole it from his mom.
No, his mom didn't have nothing like that. Anyway, it's kind of like a little postage size note, and he gave me that for Christmas. And then I was so embarrassed because everybody kind of looked down on his family. They were kind of poor like us and even more than us, and they just kind of didn't, I don't know, they were just kind of looked down on in the community. And I was so embarrassed because he gave me a Christmas gift, and I was standing over there tearing it up and putting it in the garbage can, and I looked up and saw him. He looked like he was crestfallen. But he still loved me, even after all those years when I was working in admitting at the hospital in Haleville. He came in to admit his daughters one day, and he said, "Are you Mary Faye Blankenship?" And I said, "Well, it used to be." And anyway, he's so proud to see me. And so he still loved me all those years.
And like probably at that point, you could remember that event. And yeah, just, I remember. You felt so bad.
Oh, I felt awful. I bet he didn't probably remember it, but I hope he didn't. But anyway, I felt awful because I kept thinking, there I tore his, he was so proud to give me that gift, and I tore it up. And he caught me at it.
We do silly things like that when we're kids, when though, everybody little, does.
I was embarrassed, you know.
And you've already talked about how you were a little bit of a hellion. So.
Yeah. Oh my! I got a little better as I got older. I hope I did anyway. Well, I try to improve every year a little bit.
Yeah. You're the one who awoke the love of traveling in all of us. So what awoke your love of traveling?
When I first began to read books, the first book I got was Heidi, and I got it for Christmas. Rainer, when she was working at Dr. George Francis's office as assistant, dental assistant, she had a little money that year at Christmas, and she got me the book Heidi.
How old were you about?
I was probably 7 or 8, because I could read, and it took me a year to learn to read, because I didn't even know my ABCs when I started school or anything, and I started when I was 5, like. But I was probably 7 or 8 because I was reading really good, and that just opened my eyes to other worlds than what we, little foreign world that we knew, you know, because it was just everyday repetition, this and that and the other, and same thing every day just about. And to read of somebody that was way up in high mountains and milking goats and herding goats, and how joyful she was, and to live with her grandfather, and how she loved to lay on the bed and hear the wind in the tree in the pine trees behind her house and everything. It was just written well enough that it just sparked my interest in we didn't have a lot of picture books and things like that at that time. And so that was really the first book that I ever had that I could really enjoy, I guess you'd say, because we had a few picture books at school, but we didn't have any at home, and because people couldn't afford them, and so I didn't learn to read till I was, I mean, at first I was so intimidated by going to school, and I cried the first 3 weeks and didn't learn a thing because I cried all the time, because I'd been away from my mom and Dan, because we just didn't get away from home that much. And so anyway, once I learned to read, finally started ringing a bell, and I started picking up in it. I can remember reading Dick and Jane, and the teacher would say, "Well, look up there." It came to the word table, and I didn't know what it was. She said, "Well, look at the picture." And I said, "Table." I was so proud of myself then. And she might have bragged on me because I was one of the slower ones about that, because I just wasn't, I mean, I was just intimidated by being the whole school thing.
Well, probably some of the other kids had some schooling from their sisters or
Jane
parents
and John
or
Young. They started reading. I was always in top reading class, and I was in the lowest. But the time I got in the third grade, it was just like a teacher said, a light turned on. It just really started coming to me, and I started learning. We had 3 teachers for 6th grades, and they taught. One teacher taught 1st and 2nd. Miss Virginia Wilson was our teacher in 1st and 2nd. 3rd and 4th was Miss Black. I can't remember her name. But anyway, in the 5th and 6th, they had different teachers then. Mr. Sandlin was the one that I remember the most when I was in 6th grade. But anyway, I really had my learning spell, I guess, about the 3rd grade, that if they just kind of opened up for me, it became easy then. After then, I was always at the top of the class, but it took me about 2 years to really get into school and everything. But after then, I just loved reading anything. And I read everything in the Lindishville Library, which I didn't have that many anyway. And then when I went to Mount Hope, I read everything in their library down there. So anything I get my hands on, I would read. The only thing I don't really like to read is science fiction. But I just always loved traveling and seeing other things, I mean, through other people's eyes and the way that they lived. And it's just so interesting to me that there was a world outside of that little farming community in Youngtown, you know. Because that's all we knew, was just the farming.
Did you, where was your first, I know that you went to Chicago when you were early 20s, but, or 18, I guess. And so where was your first long, far away trip after that?
When we married, we went up into to St. Marie and took a boat, a ferry boat across into Canada. We drove across Canada and came down at Niagara Falls. That was for our honeymoon. So that was my first trip out of the country. At that time, you didn't have to have a passport or anything to go into Canada. So we came down at Niagara Falls and saw the falls. And then Raymond's aunt and uncle lived in Ohio, and we went and spent the night with them. And then drove on to Alabama for the next week or so of our vacation. Because at that time, around July the 4th, a lot of big plants would kind of close down for that a week or so during the time, and let the employees have vacation. So Raymond happened to have the same vacation time I did. So anyway, we came to Alabama and spent the rest of the time with Mom and Daddy and Miss Carrie, and so then drove back to Chicago.
Did were your parents excited when they heard that you got married?
I think so. Mm-hmm. I think they, yeah. I don't know. They didn't.
Kind of didn't let on otherwise.
Well, we didn't have a phone, so yeah. I don't know why they'd
it's
be
hard to let
first.
Them know,
yeah.
I guess.
I wrote them all a letter and told them.
Thinking about your family and anybody in the future who may be listening to this, do you have any wisdom or advice you would like to share?
Well, I don't think of myself as being wise and everything. I've just tried to learn from life, and so I don't have any wisdom to share. It's just my thoughts on life, and that mainly is just to be kind to people and good to them and treat them like you want to be treated. And those are just lessons that you learn as you grow up. And I became a Christian when I was 11, and I just always wanted to be good. And after I got my fit spells behind me and all, I always wanted to be good to everybody. And I've not always been perfect, because I sure have made a lot of mistakes in my life and with my kids. But I tried to model what I wanted them to learn and show them instead of just telling them. And there's things I would do differently, like everybody would, but there's things that I'm glad that I did the way I did. So I guess it all evens out in the long run. I probably wouldn't take my life for trade it for anybody else's, because I got to travel. That was a lot that I really wanted to do, and I got to have kids, and I wanted to have, be a mother. And so I just feel like I've lived my life pretty well. And we've never been rich, but we've always had food to eat, and Raymond's always been such a hard worker, so we always had food and a warm house, and that's the main thing. Like now, I think how thankful I am to have a warm house to live in instead of cold like I grew up in the mm-hmm. wintertime. We'd freeze when it got 20 degrees. You'd hover around the fireplace and keep rotating around to warm your backside and front side,
yeah.
trying to keep warm. And so it was hard to keep warm back then. It's hard to keep cool too, but we didn't think so much about that as we did the cold weather. I couldn't stand it. It's hard. So I'd hate to have to go back those times and be cold like I was when I was growing up. And I'm thankful that I feel like I've been blessed in my life with my kids and a husband and everything.
Well, we're happy to have you, and we think you've definitely displayed that kindness and, you know, good to other people, and always taught us to be kind and good to other people and thoughtful of others, and we appreciate you teaching us that. Well, Grandma, thank you so much for letting me interview you. We appreciate you, and we love you, and we like to have this so that we can listen to it later. And
thank you.
Maybe our kids can listen to it. And
thank you.
And thank you again.
I want them to know that when they complain about having to do anything, no, I'm just kidding.
I'm sorry.
When they complain about doing anything, just think of what